This is Audible.
HarperTeen and Harper Audio present The Betrothed by Kiera Cass. Performed by Jessica Nicole. For my punk brother, Gerard, who would carry me across the Serengeti, allegedly. From the Chronicles of Koroan History, Book 1. And so, Koroans preserve the law, for if we undo one, we undo them all. Chapter 1. It was the time of year when the sunrise still had frost on it. But winter was fading, and the flowers were starting to bloom, and the promise of a new season filled me with anticipation. "I've been dreaming of spring," I sighed, staring out the window at the birds sailing boldly across a backdrop of blue sky. Delia Grace tied the last of the laces of my gown into place and moved me over to the vanity. "Me too," she replied. "Tournaments, bonfires, crowning day is on the horizon." Her tone implied I should be more excited than the average girl, but I still had my reservations. "I suppose." I could feel her exasperation in the movement of her hands. "Hollis, you will undoubtedly be His Majesty's partner and escort for the festivities. I don't know how you can be so calm." "Thank the stars we have the king's attention this year," I said, keeping my tone light as she braided back the front pieces of my hair, "or it would be as dull as a tomb here." "You say that as if your courtship were a game," she commented, sounding surprised. "It is a game," I insisted. "He'll move along soon enough, so we need to enjoy this while we can." I watched Delia Grace chewing her lips in the mirror, not looking up from her task. "Is something wrong?" I asked. She quickly perked up, lifting her lips into a smile. "Not a thing. Just perplexed by your cavalier attitude toward the king. I think there's more to his attentions than you're seeing." I looked down, thrumming my fingers across the table of the vanity. I liked Jameson. I'd be mad not to. He was handsome and wealthy, and for goodness sake, the king. He was also a fair dancer and most entertaining to be around, as long as he was in good spirits. But I was no fool. I'd watched him flit from girl to girl over the last several months. There had been at least 7, including me, and that was just counting the ones everyone at court knew about. I'd enjoy this for as long as I could, and then accept whatever lump of a person my parents chose for me. At least I'd have these days to look back upon when I was a bored old lady. "He's still young," I finally replied. "I don't see him settling down with anyone until he gets through a few more years on the throne. Besides, I'm sure he's expected to marry for political advantage. I can't offer much there." There was a knock at the door, and Delia Grace went to answer it, disappointment on her face. I could tell she really thought I stood a chance, and I instantly felt guilty for being so difficult. In our decade of friendship, we'd always supported one another, but it was different these days. As we were ladies at court, our families had maids. But the highest-ranking noblewomen in royalty? They had ladies-in-waiting. More than servants, your ladies were your confidants, your attendants, your escorts. They were everything. Delia Grace was stepping into a role that didn't exist for me yet, convinced that at any moment it would. It meant more than I knew how to say, more than I knew how to handle. What is a friend but someone who thinks you're capable of more than you do? She returned with a letter in her hand and a glint in her eye. "There's a royal seal on this," she teased, flipping the paper over in her hand. "But since we don't know how the king feels about you, I suppose there's no urgency to open it. Let me see. I stood and held a hand out, but she quickly retracted the letter, a smirk on her face. Delia Grace, you wicked girl, give it to me. She took a step back, and in a split second I was in pursuit, chasing her around my apartments, squealing with laughter. I managed to corner her twice, but she was always faster than I was and wriggled out of the spaces before I could get a hold of her. I was nearly breathless from running and laughing when I finally caught her around the waist. She held the letter out as far as she could. I might have managed to wrestle it back from her, but as I was stretching upward, my mother burst in through the doors that attached my rooms to hers. Hollis Bright, have you lost your senses? She scolded. Delia Grace and I pulled apart, placing our hands behind our backs and curtsying quickly. I could hear you girls shouting like animals through the walls. How can we hope to have a suitor matched with you if you insist on behaving like this? Sorry, Mother, I murmured contritely. I dared to peek up at her. She was standing there with the same exasperated expression plastered to her face she usually wore when speaking with me. The Copeland girl got engaged only last week, and the DeVos are in talks now as well. Yet you're still acting like a child. I swallowed, but Delia Grace had never been one to stay silent. Don't you think it's a little premature to pair Hollis with someone else? She has as good a chance as anyone at winning the king's heart. My mother did her best to suppress her condescending smile. We all know that the king's eye is prone to wander. And Hollis isn't quite queen material, wouldn't you agree? She asked with a sharply raised eyebrow, daring us to think otherwise. Besides, she added, are you really in a position to talk about anyone's potential? Delia Grace swallowed hard, her expression stone-like. I'd seen her don that mask a million times. And there you have it, Mother concluded. Having made her disappointment with us clear, she turned on her heel and left. I sighed, turning to Delia Grace. Sorry about her. It's nothing I haven't heard before, she admitted, finally handing over the letter. And I'm sorry, too. I didn't mean to get you into trouble. I took it from her and cracked the seal. No matter. If it wasn't this, it'd be something else. She made a face that said I was right, and I went to reading the note. Oh, dear, I said, patting at my loose hair. I might need your help pulling this back again. Why? I smiled over at her, waving the letter like a flag in the breeze. Because His Majesty requires our presence on the river today. How many people do you think will be there? I asked. Who knows? He does enjoy having a crowd around him. I pursed my lips. True. I'd like to have him to myself just once. Says the girl who insists this is all just a game. I looked over at her, sharing a smile. That Delia Grace, she always seemed to know more than I ever wanted to admit to. We rounded the hallway and saw that the doors were already open, welcoming the new spring sun. My heartbeat picked up when I saw the red robe trimmed in ermine draped across the back of a slim but sturdy figure at the end of the walkway. Though he wasn't facing me, his mere presence was enough to fill the air with a warm, tickling feeling. I fell into a deep curtsy. Your Majesty. And I watched as a pair of glossy black shoes turned to face me. Chapter 2. My Lady Hollis, the king said, holding out his ring-bedecked hand. I took it and rose, looking into a beautiful set of honey-brown eyes. Something about the deep and purposeful attention he bestowed upon me whenever we were together made me feel a little like I did when Delia Grace and I were dancing and I'd spun around too quickly. Slightly warm and dizzy. Your Majesty, I was so pleased to receive your invitation. I love the Colverd River.
So you've mentioned,
I remember, you see, he said, wrapping his hand around mine. He then dropped his voice. I also remember you mentioning that your parents have been a little overbearing recently. But I had to invite them for the sake of propriety. I peered behind him and saw a larger party than I'd been expecting for our excursion. My parents were present, as were some of the lords on the Privy Council, and plenty of the ladies who I knew were waiting impatiently for Jameson to finish with me so they could have their turn. In fact, I spotted Nora looking down her nose at me, with Anna Sophia and Cicely right behind her, smug in their certainty that my time was soon to end. Don't worry, your parents won't be on our barge, he assured me. I smiled, thankful for a small reprieve, but unfortunately my luck didn't extend to the winding ride in the coach down to the river. Kereskin Castle was set atop the plateau of Borody, a marvelous and unmistakable sight. To get down to the river, our carriages had to weave slowly through the streets of the capital city of Tobar, and that took some time. I saw the gleam in my father's eye as he realized this carriage ride was his chance to have an extended audience with the king. So, Your Majesty, how go things along the border? He began. I hear our men were forced into a retreat last month. I had to avoid rolling my eyes. Why would my father think that reminding the king of our recent failures was the way to strike up a conversation? Jameson, though, took the question in stride. It's true. We only have soldiers along the border to keep the peace, but what are they expected to do when attacked? Reports are that King Quentin insists the Sultan land goes all the way to the Tiberian plains. My father scoffed, though I could see he wasn't truly as calm as he appeared. He always twisted the silver ring on his pointer finger when he was nervous, and he was doing just so now. That has been Koroan land for generations. Precisely. But I have no fear. We are safe from attacks here, and Koroans make for excellent soldiers. I stared out the windows, bored by the talk of inconsequential squabbles along the border. Jameson was usually the best company, but my parents killed any joy in the coach. I couldn't help sighing in relief when we pulled up to the dock and I could exit the stifling carriage. You weren't joking about your parents, Jameson said, when we were finally alone. The last two people I'd invite to a party, that's for sure. And yet, they made the most charming girl in the world, he said, kissing my hand. I blushed and looked away, my eyes finding Delia Grace as she climbed out of her carriage, followed by Nora, Cicely, and Anna Sophia. If I thought my ride had been unbearable, her clenched fists as she walked over to me told me hers had been much worse. What happened? I whispered. Nothing that hasn't happened 1,000 times before. She rolled her shoulders back, pulling herself up taller. At least we'll be together on the boat, I assured her. Come, won't it be fun to watch their faces as you climb onto the king's ship? We walked down to the landing, and I felt a thrill of heat run up my arm when King Jameson took my hand to help me onto our boat. As promised, Delia Grace joined us, along with two of the king's advisors, while my parents and the remaining guests were escorted to various other boats at His Majesty's disposal. The royal standard was sitting proudly atop its pole, the bold Koroan red flicking back and forth so quickly in the breeze off the river that it looked like fire. I happily took my seat to Jameson's right, his fingers still laced through mine as he helped me settle in. There was food to enjoy, and furs to cover us if the winds were too chilly. It seemed anything I could desire was right there before me, which was something I was still surprised by. The lack of want when I sat beside a king. As we made our way down the river, people standing on the banks stopped and bowed when they saw the standard, or called out blessings for the king. He was so poised as he nodded his head in acknowledgement, sitting as upright as a tree. I knew not every sovereign was handsome, but Jameson was. He took great pains with his appearance, keeping his dark hair short and his bronze skin soft. He was fashionable without being frivolous, but he liked to show off the best of his possessions. Taking the boats out this early in the spring could prove that point quickly enough. And I liked that about him, if only because I got to sit here beside him, feeling unmistakably regal. Along the side of the river, near where a new bridge had been built, a weather-worn statue stood, casting her shadow down the slope toward the blue-green waters. As tradition dictated, the gentlemen on the boats rose to stand while the ladies dropped our heads in respect. There were books filled with the tales of Queen Albraid riding through the countryside and fending off the Isultans while her husband, King Shane, was off in Moorland for matters of state. Upon his return, the king had 7 statues of his wife placed across Corroa, and every August, all the ladies at court did dances holding wooden swords to remember her victory. Indeed, the queens throughout Corroan history were often remembered more vividly than the kings, and Queen Albraid wasn't even the most revered. There was Queen Hanovi, who walked the far line of the country, setting the boundaries and blessing with a kiss the trees and rocks she used as markers. To this day, people would look for the stones in particular, as they were placed by the queen herself, and kiss them too, for luck. Queen Laha was famous for taking care of Corroan children at the height of the Isultan plague, so named because when people contracted it and died, their skin turned as blue as the Isultan flag. She walked bravely into the city herself to find the little ones who survived and place them with new families. Even Queen Rhaemira, Jameson's mother, was known across the country for her kindness. She was, perhaps, the opposite of her husband, King Marcellus. Where he tended to strike first without question, she was known to seek peace. I'd heard at least 3 potential wars were stopped by her gentle reasoning. The young men of Corroa owed a debt of gratitude to her, as did their mothers. The legacies of Corroan queens left a mark on the entire continent, which was probably part of Jameson's draw. Not only was he handsome and rich, not only would he make you a queen, he would make you a legend. "I love being on the water," Jameson commented, drawing me back to the beauty of the moment. "Probably one of my favorite things as a boy was sailing to Sabino with my father."
"I remember your father was an excellent sailor," Delia Grace remarked, inserting herself in the conversation.
Jameson nodded enthusiastically. "One of his many talents. I sometimes think I inherited more of my mother's traits than his, but sailing stayed with me. His love of traveling, too. What of you, Lady Hollis? Do you like to travel?"
I shrugged. "I've never really had the chance. I've lived the entirety of my life between Kereskin Castle and Varinger Hall. But I've always wanted to go to Eridor," I breathed. "I do love the sea, and I've been told the beaches there are a thing of beauty."
"They are," he smiled and looked away. "I've heard it's the fashion now for couples to take a trip together when they get married."
He met my eyes once more.
"You should make sure your husband takes you to Eridor. You'd look radiant on the white beaches."
He looked away again, popping berries into his mouth as if it was nothing to speak of husbands and trips and being alone. I looked at Delia Grace, who stared back at me with astonished eyes. I knew once we were in private, we would pull apart every piece of that moment to figure out just what it meant. Was he trying to say he thought I should marry? Or was he hinting that I should marry him? These were the questions on my mind as I sat up, looking across the water. Nora was there with her sour expression, watching with the other wretched girls from court.
As I peeked around, I noted several pairs of eyes settled, not upon the beauty of the day, but on me. The only set that seemed angry, though, was Nora's. I picked up a berry and hurled it over at her, hitting her square in the chest. Cicely and Anna Sophia laughed, and Nora's jaw dropped in shock. But she quickly picked up some fruit of her own and threw it back at me, her expression shifting to something resembling happiness. Giggling, I picked up more and began a war of sorts. "Hollis, what in the world are you doing?" Mother called from her boat, just loud enough to be heard above the slaps of paddles on the water. I looked at her and replied in all seriousness, "Defending my honor, of course." I caught Jameson's chuckle as I turned back to Nora. There was a stream of laughter and berries going in both directions. It was the best fun I'd had in a while, until I leaned a little too far over for a rather determined throw and ended up toppling into the water. I heard the gasps and cries of those around me, but I managed to get in a good breath and came up without choking.
"Hollis!"
Jameson exclaimed, reaching an arm out for me. I grabbed on and he pulled me safely back into the boat in a matter of seconds.
"Sweet Hollis, are you all right? Are you hurt?"
"No," I sputtered out, already shivering from the chill of the water. "But I seem to have lost my shoes." Jameson looked down at my stockinged feet and burst out laughing.
"We shall have to fix that, won't we?"
There was laughter all around now that I was fine, and Jameson took off his coat to wrap it around me, keeping me warm.
"Back to shore, then," he ordered, still smiling.
He held me close, looking deep into my eyes. I sensed that in this moment, shoes gone, hair a mess, soaking wet, he found me irresistible. And yet, with my parents just behind him, with a dozen demanding lords hovering nearby, he was forced to settle for placing a warm kiss on my cool forehead. It was enough to send new waves through my stomach, and I wondered if every moment with him would feel like this. I'd been dying for him to kiss me, hoping every time we got a brief second to ourselves, he'd pull me close. So far, though, it hadn't happened. I knew he'd kissed Hannah and Myra, but if he'd kissed any of the others, they weren't telling. I wondered if his not kissing me yet was a good sign or a bad one.
"Can you stand?"
Delia Grace asked, bringing me back to the moment as she helped me onto the dock. "The dress is much heavier when drenched," I admitted.
"Oh, Hollis, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to make you fall,"
Nora exclaimed once she climbed off her own boat.
"Nonsense. It was my fault, and I learned a very valuable lesson. I shall only enjoy the river from my window from now on," I replied with a wink. She laughed, almost looking as if she did so in spite of her better judgment.
"Are you sure you're all right?"
"Yes. I may have a runny nose tomorrow, but I'm right as rain and twice as wet. No hard feelings, I promise."
She smiled, and it felt genuine.
"Here, let me help you," she offered.
"I've got her," Delia Grace snapped.
Nora's smile instantly faded, and she went from looking quite pleased to unimaginably irritated.
"Yes, I'm sure you do. Seeing as you never had a chance of getting Jameson's attention on your own, holding onto Hollis's skirts is the best a girl like you could do."
She raised an eyebrow and turned.
"I'd keep my grip tight if I were you."
I opened my mouth to tell Nora that Delia Grace's situation had never been her fault, but I found a hand on my chest stopping me.
"Jameson will hear," Delia Grace said through gritted teeth. "Let's just go."
The heartbreak in her voice was unmistakable, but she was right. Men battled on open fields. Women battled behind fans. I held onto her with a firm grip as we made our way back to the castle. After so much abuse in one afternoon, I wondered if she might retreat into solitude the next day. She'd done that often when we were young and her heart couldn't bear to hear another word. But the following morning, she was in my room, wordlessly pulling my hair into another intricate design. It was in the middle of this that a knock came at the door, and she opened it to an army of maids bringing in bouquet after bouquet of the first blooms of spring.
"What exactly is this all about?" Delia Grace asked, directing them to set the flowers on any open surface they could find.
A maid curtsied before me and handed me a folded note. I smiled to myself as I went to read it aloud. "In the event you have caught cold and were unable to venture out into nature today, I thought that nature ought to come to its queen." Delia Grace's eyes widened.
"Its queen?"
I nodded, my heart racing. "Find my golden dress, please. I think the king deserves a thank you." Chapter 3. I walked down the hallway with my head high, Delia Grace just behind my right shoulder. I met the eyes of older attendees at court, smiling and nodding at them in acknowledgement. Most paid me no mind, which wasn't surprising. I knew they felt there wasn't much point in them getting attached to the king's latest fling. It wasn't until we approached the main hallway to the great room that I heard something that set me on edge.
"That's the one I was telling you about," a woman whispered loudly to her friend, in a tone that made it impossible to mistake the words for praise. I froze, looking at Delia Grace. The squint of her eyes told me she'd heard it too, and didn't know what to make of it.
There was a chance they were talking about her. About her parents, about her father. But gossip surrounding Delia Grace was old news, and the teasing surrounding it was usually reserved for young ladies looking for someone to take a dig at. Everyone else looked for news stories, exciting ones. The kind that might surround King Jameson's latest love interest.
"Take a breath," Delia Grace commanded. "The king will want to see you're well."
I touched the flower I'd tucked behind my ear, making sure it was still in place. I straightened my gown and kept moving. She was right, of course. It was the same strategy that she'd used for years now. But by the time we walked into the great room, the stares were unmistakably disapproving. I tried to keep my expression unreadable, but underneath it all, I was a trembling mess. Against the wall, a man was standing, arms crossed, shaking his head.
"It would shame the whole country," someone muttered as they passed me.
Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Nora. Going against every instinct I'd had up until yesterday, I walked over to her, Delia Grace trailing like a shadow.
"Good morning, Lady Nora. I'm not sure if you've noticed, but some of those at court today are..." I couldn't find a word for it.
"Yes," she answered quietly.
"It seems someone on our outing yesterday shared the story of our little battle. No one appears to be upset with me, but of course, I am not the king's favorite."
I swallowed. "But His Majesty has been moving from lady to lady this last year as if it were nothing. He can't be planning to keep my company much longer, so what's the problem?"
She made a face. "He took you out of the palace. He let you sit under the flag. As casual as you might think yesterday was, it was unique to all of his interactions with women to date."
"Oh.
It's the Lords, isn't it?" Delia Grace asked Nora. "The ones on the council?" In their first civil interaction in all the years I'd known them both, Nora gave a quick and sympathetic nod.
"What does that mean?" I asked. "Why would the king even care what anyone thought?"
Delia Grace, who'd always been a quicker study at government and protocol, only half rolled her eyes at me. "The lords run their counties for the king. He is dependent upon them. If the king wants peace in the outreaches of the land and expects taxes to be collected properly, he needs the lords on the council to handle it," Nora added. "If the lords are unhappy with the way things are done, well, let's just say they can become lazy at their jobs."
Ah.
So the king could lose both income and security if he made the foolish mistake of aligning himself with someone the lords didn't like. Someone like a girl who fell into a river while flinging fruit at another girl, all while still in sight of the statue honoring one of the greatest queens the country had ever known. For a split second, I was completely overcome by humiliation. I'd read far too much into Jameson's words, into his attentions. I'd really thought that becoming queen might be a possibility. But then I remembered. I'd always known I wouldn't be queen. Yes, it would be fun to be the wealthiest lady in all of Koroa, to have statues erected in my honor. But that wasn't realistic. And surely Jameson was only moments away from being swept off his feet by another pretty smile. The best I could do was enjoy Jameson's elaborate flirtations while they lasted. Taking Nora's hand, I faced her. Thank you, both for the bit of fun yesterday and your honesty today. I owe you. She smiled. Crowning day is in a few weeks. If you and the king are still attached, I assume you'll choreograph a dance for him. If you do, let me be a part of it. Plenty of girls performed new dances for crowning day, hoping to gain favor by honoring the king. I supposed, if Jameson was still entertaining the idea of me then, I would be expected to have one ready. From what I remembered, Nora was pretty graceful. I'll want all the help I can get. You absolutely have a place. I motioned for Delia Grace to follow me once more. Come, I need to thank the king.
Are you mad?
She whispered, aghast.
You're not really going to let her dance with us, are you?
I looked back at her, incredulous. She just showed me great kindness, and she was more than polite to you. It's just a dance, and she's very light on her feet. It will make us all look better.
Her actions today can hardly make up for past wrongs,
Delia Grace insisted. We're growing up, I told her. Things change. Her face said she wasn't at all pacified by that answer, but she stayed silent as we made our way through the sea of people. King Jameson was on the raised stone dais at the head of the great room. It was wide, built with room for a large royal family to occupy it, but it currently held only a single throne with two small seats on either side for whoever his most important guests were at the moment. The great room was used for everything, receiving guests, balls, and even dinner each night. Along the eastern wall, the steps up to the gallery for the musicians were lined with tall windows that let in ample amounts of sunlight. But it was the western wall that drew my gaze each time I entered the room. Six stained glass windows spanned the length, stretching from the height of my waist all the way to the ceiling. The windows depicted scenes from Koroan history in glorious illustration, cascading color and light throughout the room. There was one window depicting Estus being crowned, and another of women dancing in a field. One of the original panes had been destroyed in a war, and it was replaced seamlessly with the scene of King Talau bending his knee to Queen Thenelope. It might have been my favorite of the six. I wasn't entirely sure of her role in our history, but she was deserving enough to be immortalized in the room where all the important day-to-day living of the palace was done. And that alone was impressive. While large tables were brought in and out for dinners, and people would come and go with seasons, the windows in the dais were always the same. I moved my eyes from the depictions of kings past to the one upon the throne now. I watched as he engaged in a deep discussion with one of his lords, but when the gold of my dress caught his eye, he turned for a second. Then, realizing it was me, he summarily dismissed the lord. I curtsied and approached the throne, welcomed by a set of warm and gracious hands.
My Lady Hollis, he shook his head. You are the rising sun. Gorgeous.
At those words, all my resolve was undone. How could I be sure I meant nothing when he looked at me like that? I hadn't watched him closely with the others. I didn't think it was important at the time. But it felt completely unique. The way he moved his thumb back and forth on my hand, as if a single patch of skin wasn't enough for him. "Your Majesty is too generous," I finally answered, ducking my head. "Not just with your words, but with your gifts. I wanted to thank you for the entire garden you sent to my room," I said pointedly, to which he chuckled. "And I wanted you to know I was well."
"Excellent. Then you must sit with me at dinner tonight."
My stomach flipped. "Majesty?"
"As well as your parents, of course. I could use a change of company."
I curtsied again. "As you wish." I could see there were others waiting for his attention, so I quickly backed away, positively giddy. I reached out for Delia Grace's hand, clutching her for support.
"You're going to be set beside the king, Hollis," she murmured.
"Yes." The thought left me breathless, as if I'd run across the garden.
"And your parents as well.
He hasn't done that before." I gripped her hand even tighter.
"I know.
Shall we go tell them?" I looked into Delia Grace's all-seeing eyes, the ones that could read my simultaneous excitement and fear, the ones that saw I didn't understand what was happening. Those very eyes brightened as she smirked.
"I think a lady of your importance should simply have a letter sent."
We laughed as we left the room, not caring if anyone looked or made comments. I still wasn't completely convinced of Jameson's intentions, and I knew that the people at court weren't thrilled by my presence, but none of that mattered right now. Tonight, I would dine beside a king, and that was something to celebrate. Delia Grace and I sat in my room, completing the reading time she insisted we have daily. She had a variety of interests. History, mythology, and the great philosophers of the day. I preferred novels. Usually, I'd be transported to places dreamed up in the pages of a book. But today, my ears were on edge. I was listening, glancing over at the door every few minutes, waiting for them to storm in. At the one moment I finally stumbled upon an interesting section, the doors flew open.
"Is this a joke?" my father asked, his tone not angered but shockingly hopeful.
I shook my head. "No, sir. The king extended the invitation just this morning. You seemed so busy, I thought a letter would be more appropriate."
I shot a conspiratorial look at Delia Grace, who pretended to still be immersed in her book.
My mother swallowed, her body never fully settling in one spot as she spoke.
"We are all to sit with the king tonight?"
I nodded. "Indeed, madam. You, father, and myself. I'll need Delia Grace with me, so I thought her mother might join us as well." At that, mother's excited fidgeting stopped. My father closed his eyes, and I recognized the action from many a time when he wanted to think over his words before he spoke them.
"Certainly you would prefer to be solely in the company of your family for such a momentous occasion."
I smiled. "There is room for all of us, and more at the king's table. I hardly think it will matter." My mother looked down her nose at me.
"Delia Grace, would you please leave us to speak with our daughter?"
We shared a tired look, and Delia Grace closed her book, setting it on the table before she left.
"Mother, honestly."
She moved quickly, coming to tower over me where I sat.
"This is not a game, Hollis. That girl is tainted, and she shouldn't be in your company. At first it seemed sweet, like charity. But now, you have to sever ties."
My mouth fell open.
I most certainly will not. She has been my closest friend at court.
She's a bastard, my mother hissed. I swallowed. That is a rumor. Her mother has sworn she was faithful. Lord Domnall only threw that accusation at Delia Grace's mother 8 years after the fact, mind you, so he could arrange a divorce.
Either way, a divorce is enough of a reason to stay away from her, Mother argued.
It's not her fault.
Too right you are, dear, Father added, ignoring me. If her mother's blood isn't bad enough, her father's is. Divorced. He shook his head. And to have eloped at all, let alone so quickly after.
I sighed. Corroa was a land of laws, many of them centered around family and marriage. Being unfaithful to your spouse meant you were, at best, an outcast. At worst, there would be a trip to the tower. Divorce was something so rare, I'd never actually seen it happen with my own eyes. But Delia Grace had. Her father claimed that his wife, the former Lady Clara Domnall, had an affair that resulted in the birth of their only child, Delia Grace. On those grounds, he demanded and was granted a divorce. But within 3 months, he'd run off with another lady, handing off the titles Delia Grace was set to inherit to this woman and any offspring they might produce. Of course, what were titles with such a reputation? Eloping meant an awareness of widespread disapproval and was seen as a last resort, with some couples choosing to separate rather than take such desperate action. Still a lady in her own right, Lady Clara reclaimed her maiden name and brought her daughter to court so that she might be able to grow up with the influence of the gentry. What she got instead was endless torment. I'd always found the whole story questionable. If Lord Domnall had suspected his wife had been unfaithful and that Delia Grace wasn't his, why did he wait 8 years to bring it up? There had never been any proof to back up the claims, but he was granted his divorce all the same. Delia Grace said he must have fallen hard for the woman he eloped with. I tried to tell her it was nonsense, but she shook her head at me. No, he must have loved her more than my mother and me combined. Why would you leave for something you cared for less? The look in her eyes was so resolute that I couldn't argue with her, and I never brought up the topic again. I didn't need to. Half the palace did on our behalf. And if they weren't judging her to her face, they were at least thinking it. My parents were proof enough of that. You are being too hasty, I insisted. It was very generous of the king to invite us to dinner, but it doesn't mean anything more will come of it. And even if it does, after all this time, doesn't Delia Grace, who has always been a model of perfection at court, deserve to stay at my side? My father huffed.
People have already passed judgment about your escapades on the river. Do you want to give them more ammunition?
I thrust my hands into my lap, thinking it was pointless to argue with my parents. When had I ever won? The closest I ever came was when Delia Grace was beside me. That was it. I sighed, looking up at my parents, their faces still determined. I understand your concerns, but perhaps our wishes aren't the only ones to be considered here, I offered.
I owe nothing to that scandal of a girl, Mother spat.
No, I mean the king. At that, they silenced themselves. Finally, my father ventured to speak.
Explain.
I only mean that His Majesty has become quite enamored of me, and part of what makes my day so easy is Delia Grace's companionship. Furthermore, Jameson is much more compassionate than his father and might understand taking her under my wing. With your permission, I'd like to pose the question to him. I'd chosen my words carefully, measured my tone. There was no way they could call me sulky or whiny, and there was no way they could pretend to have a higher authority than a king.
Very well, Father said. Why not ask him tonight?
but she is not invited to sit with us. Not this time.
I nodded. I'll write to her now so she understands.
Do excuse me.
I kept my serene air about me as I fetched some parchment from my desk, and they left, looking puzzled. When the door closed, I giggled to myself. Delia Grace, I'm very sorry, but my parents have made a stand about the dinner tonight. Don't fret. I have a plan to keep you by my side always. Come and find me later tonight, and I will explain everything. Have courage, dear friend. Hollis. There were still judgmental glances being cast at me as I made my way to dinner, and I realized I didn't much care for it. How had Delia Grace survived this kind of scrutiny, and from such a young age? As it was, my parents didn't care about the glares, but instead walked in as if they were showing off a purebred mare they'd just inherited, and that only garnered more attention. Mother turned around to look at me, assessing even as we approached the head table. I'd kept my golden gown on, and she'd let me borrow one of her headpieces, so I had a string of jewels across my golden hair. "It's not really showing up," she said, looking at the headpiece. "I don't know how your hair came out so blonde, but it just ruins the look of jewels across your head." "Nothing I can do to help it," I replied, as if I didn't know already. My hair was a shade or two lighter than that of most of the crowd, and more than one person had noted it across my lifetime. "I blame your father."
"I wouldn't," he snapped.
I swallowed, seeing the tension of the moment was truly getting to them. It was a well-observed rule of the family that all bickering was reserved for the privacy of our apartments. Suddenly remembering this, they bit back their bitterness as we approached the head table.
"Your Majesty,"
Father greeted him, a false, wide smile on his face. But Jameson hardly noticed they were there. His eyes rested solely on me. I curtsied low, unable to look away. "Your Majesty."
"Lady Hollis. Lord and Lady Bright. You look in good spirits. Please, come and sit."
He held his hand out, gesturing for us to come behind the table. My breath sped up as I settled beside the king, ready to weep with joy when he kissed my hand. Turning around, I saw the great room as I'd never seen it before. Elevated on the dais, it was easy to see everyone's faces, to watch as rank dictated who took which seat. Surprisingly, where all the attention as I walked in left me uneasy, taking in those same stares when I was beside Jameson gave me a thrill. From his side, I could see the same thought lingering in every gaze. I wish it were me. After a few quiet moments of staring into my eyes, Jameson took a deep breath and turned to my father.
"Lord Bright, I hear your estates are some of the prettiest in all of Koroa."
My father's chest lifted.
"I would say so. We have a magnificent garden and good, comfortable lands. There is even a tree with a wooden swing that I used as a child. Hollis climbed up the ropes once herself," he said, then made a face like he wished he hadn't. "But it's hard to make time to travel back when Kereskin is so beautiful, especially for the holidays. Crowning day in the country just doesn't compare." "I imagine not. All the same, I'd like to see it sometime."
"Your Majesty is always welcome." My mother reached over and touched Father's arm. A visit from a royal meant lots of preparation and money spent, but it was quite a win for any family to earn a visit to their estates. Jameson turned back to me.
"So you climbed up the ropes of your swing, did you?"
I smiled, thinking back to the moment fondly. I saw a nest and very much wished to be a bird myself. Wouldn't it be lovely to fly? So I decided I would go live there with the mother bird and see if she took me into her family.
And?
I was scolded for ripping my dress instead. The king roared with laughter, drawing the attention of most of the room. I could feel the heat of 1,000 eyes on me, but all I could think about were his. Delicate crinkles lined the corner of his eyes as they lit with joy. It was beautiful. I could make Jameson laugh, and very few people possessed such a talent. It amazed me that such a silly little story entertained him so. I'd actually climbed up the ropes of the swing many times, never getting too far, partly because I feared the height, and partly because I feared my parents' reproach. But I remembered that day in particular, the mother bird with her little ones, flying off to get food for them. She seemed so worried for her babies, so ready to meet their needs. I had to ask myself later how desperate I must have been to want a bird for a mother. "Do you know what I want, Hollis? I want to hire someone to walk behind us and ink down every single word you say. Every compliment, every story. You are endlessly entertaining, and I don't want to forget a second of it. I'm already looking forward to what tales I'll hear at dinner tomorrow." My smile came back to me. Tomorrow. It seemed Jameson intended to keep me at his side for a while. "Then you must tell me all of your stories, too. I want to know everything," I said, resting my chin on my palm, waiting. Jameson's lips lifted into a devilish smirk. "Don't worry, Hollis. You will know everything soon enough."
Chapter 4. "Why didn't you come to dinner? You could have attended still," I said, wrapping my arms around Delia Grace. The palace halls were empty, and that made our voices echo even more than they usually did. "I thought it would be easier to just not be there rather than go with my mother and explain why I wasn't sitting beside you for the first time in 10 years. I made a face. "My parents, sometimes they think they're too stuck up to even be seen with me." She giggled a little. "Have they ordered that I stay away then?" I crossed my arms. If they did, it wouldn't matter, seeing as Jameson said you should be with me always. Her face lit up. "Really?" I nodded. "After you left, my parents made their case for setting you aside, as if I could ever find a better friend. But I calmly reminded them that you helped me get through my days now, and if that pleases the king, then it ought to be good enough for them. So, of course, my mother brought the issue up at dinner, citing your reputation as if you had anything to do with it." Delia Grace rolled her eyes. "Of course she did. But listen, listen. Jameson asked, 'Is she truly such a good friend?' And I said, 'Second only to you, Your Majesty.' And then I batted my lashes at him. That man loves to be flattered." She crossed her arms, waiting for more. "I know. So he said, 'Do you really consider me your friend, dear Hollis?' And I still can't believe I dared to do this in front of so many people. I lifted his hand in mine and kissed it."
"No!"
she whispered excitedly.
"Yes!"
And I said, "There is no one in this world who shows me such respect and care as you. But Delia Grace is close." He stared at me for a second, and oh, Delia Grace, I think he would have kissed me had we been alone. And then he said, "If it makes Lady Hollis happy, then Delia Grace must stay on." And that was the end of it.
"Oh, Hollis!"
She threw her arms around me. "So there. I'd like to see my parents try to wriggle their way around that."
"I'm sure they'll try."
She shook her head.
"It sounds like he's willing to give you anything you want."
I looked down. I wish I could just be sure of what he wanted. I sighed. But even if I was, I don't know how to win people over, and I'd have to do just that to make the lords happy with his choice. Her eyebrows knit together in thought.
"Go get some sleep. I'll be in your room in the morning, and we will figure this out."
She'd have a plan. When had Delia Grace ever not had a plan?
I hugged her and kissed her cheek. Good night. The next morning, I awoke feeling anything but refreshed. My mind had been racing through the night, and all I wanted to do was talk through each of my thoughts and pull at the threads until I found the answers tied up at the end of one. I still couldn't believe that Jameson might truly want to make me his queen. But the more I considered whether it was a real possibility, the more exciting the thought became. If I could just do something to make the people comfortable with me as a choice, I too could be adored. People could kiss the places I visited, like Queen Anovi, or have festivals for me, like Queen Albraid. Save for Queen Thenelope, who'd been royal in her own right, every other queen had been a Koroan girl like me. They'd all come from good families, all been embraced, all left a mark on history. Maybe that could be me too. Delia Grace walked in carrying a handful of books while I was still hugging my knees to my chest in bed. Do you think becoming queen means you get to sleep in all the time now? She joked. I could hear the hint of a bite to her words, but decided not to address it. I didn't sleep well. Well, I hope you're ready to work regardless. We have a lot to cover. She went to the vanity and nodded at it, her way of instructing me to come and sit. Like what? I walked over, letting her pull my hair off my face. When it comes to dancing and entertaining, I believe you can top any lady at court. But your understanding of international relations is weak, and if you want to convince the lords of the council that you are a serious choice, you need to be able to speak to them about politics of the court. I gulped. Agreed. So what do we do? I feel like if I have to sit through a lesson with this stuffy old tutor, I might just die. Delia Grace placed her pins quickly, pulling the top section of my hair into a simple bun while leaving the rest of it down. I can help you. I have some books, and anything I don't have, the king would certainly provide. I nodded. If Jameson really intended to take me as a bride, he'd want me as educated as possible. And languages, Delia Grace added. You need to learn at least one more. I'm rotten with languages. How am I? I sighed. You're probably right. If we ever visit Katal, I don't want to be completely lost. How solid is your geography? She asked. Solid enough. Let me get dressed. I hopped up to go to my armoire. Might I suggest Koroan red? I wiggled a finger at her. Good thinking. I tried to consider other small, strategic things we could do to curry favor, but as Delia Grace had so astutely pointed out, I was much more gifted at entertaining than planning. As she cinched up the last string of my kirtle, a knock came at the door. She tied off the knot and went to answer it as I looked at myself in the mirror, making sure everything was straight before my company came in. Lord Seema was standing there, his expression looking as if he'd recently been eating a lemon. I sank into a curtsy, hoping my shock didn't show on my face. My lord, to what do I owe this honor? He wrung his fingers back and forth over the paper in his hands.
My Lady Hollis, it has not escaped my notice that you have gained the king's special attention in recent weeks.
I'm not sure about that, I hedged. His Majesty has been very kind to me, but that's all I can really say. He glanced around the room, looking like he wished he had another gentleman to share the moment with. Finding no one worthy, he sighed and went on.
I can't tell if you are playing ignorant or if you truly can't tell. Either way, you do have his attention, and I was hoping you might do me a favor.
My eyes darted to Delia Grace, who raised her eyebrows as if to say, "Go on." I clasped my hands in front of me, hoping to look modest and attentive. If I needed to learn about the politics of court, I supposed this was as first-hand a lesson as I was going to get. I can't make any promises, sir, but
Please, tell me why you've come. Lord Sima unfolded his papers and handed them over to me.
As you know, Upchurch County is at the farthest edge of Koroa. To get there, or to Royston or Burn, you have to take some of the oldest roads in the country. The ones made as our ancestors slowly worked their way towards the forests and fields at the end of our territory.
Yes, I said, and for what it was worth, I did remember that little bit of Koroan history.
As such, these roads are in the greatest need of repair. I have fine carriages, and even they struggle. You can imagine the strain this puts on the poorest of my community, who might need to travel to the capital for any reason.
I can. He made a good point. Back home at Varinger Hall, we too owned and kept lands, and we had many families who lived on them and paid rent to us in money and goods. I'd seen their old horses and weathered carts. It would have been a challenge to come even from our closer county to the castle with those things. I couldn't picture trying to do it from the farthest reaches of the country. What is your aim here, sir?
I'd like a royal survey of all the roads in Koroa. I've tried to mention this to His Majesty twice this year, and he has brushed it off. I was wondering if you could encourage him to make it a priority.
I took a deep breath. How in the world would I go about that? I looked down at the papers I had no hope of understanding before handing them back to Lord Sima. If I can get the king to focus on this, I would ask a favor of my own in return.
I assumed nothing less, he replied, crossing his arms.
If this project moves forward, I began slowly, I expect you to speak kindly of me to anyone you pass who mentions my name. And if you discuss this interaction with the other lords, would you please tell them I received you graciously?
He smiled. My lady, you make it sound as if I would have to lie. You have my